Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Today's bonus episode of Star Talk Radio is presented exclusively by Audible. Audible offers an unmatched selection of audiobooks, original audio shows, news, comedy, and more from the leading audiobook publishers, broadcasters, entertainers, magazines, and newspaper publishers, as well as business information providers. And Audible has the newest book from today's guest, Andy Weir. Listen to Artemis, read by Rosario Dawson, today. New subscribers can join Audible for free for 30 days. Go to audible.com/startalk to get started. That's audible.com/startalk for your free 30-day trial.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now.
This is Star Talk. Today, in this bonus episode, you'll hear my extended interview with author Andy Weir. Let's get right to it.
So, Andy, you couldn't leave it alone.
I just couldn't.
You just had to keep doing this.
It's a sickness.
Putting a dude on Mars.
Yep.
Was not enough.
Insufficient.
Insufficient.
Now I'm putting a city on the moon.
Having a movie about the book was not enough.
It was a good start.
You just had to keep going.
Gotta. That's my whole job.
Well, that original book was sort of battle tested because it was written in parcels, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And the internet would react and you'd react back. So, but this one, not so much.
No, this was a traditional contract with Random House. And so I didn't get to post it a chapter at a time like I did for The Merchant because
Have everyone's buy-in in advance.
I don't, yeah. When a publisher gives you a big pile of money to write a book, they don't like it when you post it for free. So they prefer that you don't do that.
I see.
I was on my own this time.
Uh-huh. So did anyone tell you, like, there's no air on the moon? Did they tell you this in advance? It's a really hostile place. More hostile than Mars?
No, it didn't come up.
No one told you.
I need to make some edits, maybe. Is it too late? The book comes out tomorrow as of the time that we're taping this. But of course, I'm a space dork. Not that I have to tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
And
people wear space dork titles with pride in
yes,
this office.
Absolutely.
This is a space dork safe space.
A space dork, a safe space dork space. Yeah.
Yeah.
So of course the moon's always been as fascinating to me as Mars.
Mm-hmm. So this required an entire other layer of thinking to make existence on the moon real.
Well, yeah, I mean, so this time it wasn't just like a flags and footprints mission like The Martian was. I wanted to make a story about humanity's first non-Earth city. And so the first thing I had to figure out was, why would anybody build a city somewhere other than Earth? I needed an economic reason for that to happen.
Mm-hmm. So let's start there.
Okay.
Why?
Tourism.
Tourism. Very good.
Okay.
Very
and,
good. I'll go.
But it's, yeah.
I would save, I did my own personal math on this. Mm-hmm. I would save 5 years, maybe 10 years of vacation money to spend on one vacation on the moon.
Oh, is that's your threshold?
That's my sort of equation there.
Well, I did.
If you can't get it that cheap, just forget it.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay then. Well, I did my own math on what I think the commercial space industry might get to in terms of efficiency.
By when?
Artemis takes place in the 2080s.
Okay. Almost in reach.
Almost in reach. Probably I won't see it.
But
probably
people alive today will.
Oh, yeah, some
and
people.
And you might see it if we do a little, genetic thing.
Yeah, CRISPR, yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's the aging gene. Let's swap that out.
Well, I don't know why we didn't do that earlier. it's based on the presumption that the commercial space industry would become as efficient in terms of fuel to overhead ratio as the commercial airline industry. And I wrote a whole article on that, which is actually coming out in Business Insider. Yeah, and I wrote this whole kind of, you know, very amateurish economic analysis, but, you know, I'm not getting investors. I'm just writing fiction, so it just has to make enough sense for that.
What is the cost to send a person to the moon in your 2080 future?
Well, if you wanted to go to the moon for 2 weeks, which includes a week travel time there and a week travel time back. So
week?
Yep.
It's 3 days. What are you talking about?
Well, if you go the Apollo route, but if you use a lunar cycler.
Oh, okay. So this will save energy.
A lot.
Oh.
Yeah, right. So your lunar cycler is
Let's go straight there.
Let's go straight there.
Yeah.
But the lunar cycler, I use the Uphoff Crouch cycler that those guys defined, I want to say, in the 80s. And it's
those guys?
Uphoff and Crouch.
Okay.
And I was.
These
really
weren't just syllables spilling out.
Yeah,
of your mouth.
These aren't just random
names
noises.
Of two people.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They're the names of two people. Unfortunately, I've forgotten their first names, so I can't give them fully the credit they deserve. But it's a paper I found that describes a lunar cycler. Anyway, grand total, you would spend about $70,000 in 2015 dollars to be able to go to the moon.
So you could easily. If you wanted to create a lottery that you can send people all the time.
Sure. Or I think a lot of people would get a second mortgage on their home to be able to spend 2 weeks on the moon.
Right. Everyone's home is worth more than $70,000 now. So you could easily pull that out of the value of your house.
Possibly. Yeah. Or there could be financing.
Not everyone's,
I don't know.
But I mean,
but it's not. Yeah. It's not. Like,
most people who own homes, their homes are worth more than $70,000. Yeah.
But it's not like going to France. It's considerably more expensive, you know, something like that. Mm-hmm. And these are all in 2015 dollars, by the way, because that's when I did all the economic stuff.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's the money part.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and how about the food part? How did you solve that?
Well, of course.
First, let me say in advance, I was at one of your lunches at Comic-Con New York.
I saw you eating
and they had
that.
This green powder. That was offered me. They said, oh, this is what Andy invented for his book. I said, isn't his book fiction? They said, yeah, but this is real. Isn't his book fiction? So it was some kind of powdered algae. And just to show you how much I love you and how much I trust you, I ate it.
Yeah, I saw that.
Okay.
I saw the video.
It was real. It was real. I said, all right, Andy, he doesn't want me dead.
Right.
I don't think yet.
It's the name of the algae is chlorella. Mm-hmm. Not to be confused with cholera. You don't want to eat cholera.
Chlorella. That sounds like a hair color. Hair color.
Yes,
chlorella.
It sounds like a brand.
Yes.
It's chlorella, and the reason they
was it actively alive when I ate it?
No, it was way dead by the time you
way
ate
dead.
It.
Not just
it was a powder. It was dead.
Okay.
Yeah. No. It's not. It lives in the ocean. It lives in completely surrounded by water.
Okay.
And the way you guys ate it is actually, I watched you and LeVar Burton eating it. That was awesome.
Both of us were on location
for
this
like,
event.
You were both like, well, yeah, the way people in Artemis eat it is they add a little bit of water, so it's more like an oatmeal.
Your people didn't tell me this.
Yes, they did not.
I looked at it and I said, who eats powder?
Yeah.
Surely there's some water you would have to add to this.
Well, this
is how they did it on the moon. Right. So I said, let me play along.
Yes. Well, also they add flavorant. The idea is that, chlorella algae in general, of course, it reproduces with doubling times. So you can, in a fairly small volume, grow a lot of calories of food as long as you've got the energy. And the energy is not a problem. Artemis has reactors. You're good. But
wouldn't all life have doubling times?
That's true. That's true.
If you have an open ecosystem for it, yeah.
Yes, but the doubling time of wheat is a little slower than you'd like, it takes a lot of surface area and volume to grow. So that's what kind of the poor people eat. The algae. That plus flavorants, like artificial flavors that you import from Earth, which are fairly cheap because it doesn't weigh a lot to bring like a thing of extract up. If you're rich,
it's like vanilla extract at home.
Right.
It's in your cabinet for years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need like three drops to make a batch of cookies.
Right.
Right.
Right. Right.
Yeah. But then, if you're a little wealthier or if you're poor, but want to go out for a good meal, then you eat food that's been imported from Earth.
Oh.
And that's good old fashioned food. Although of course it's not going to be fresh.
This reminds me of, the early days when international transportation was expensive. Because we're old enough to remember a time when if you had something imported, You would tell people that.
This is my imported.
Yes, this is imported cheese. Imported. This is imported wine.
This is rich, real Corinthian leather.
Corinthian. So it was imported. That was a mark of exclusivity. Now so much goods are transported across the ocean. Mm-hmm. It's not a point of pride anymore. It just is.
It just is. And in terms of expense, it's... I mean,
well, in fact, I remember in grocery stores, there'd be the imported section.
Oh, yes.
Right. This is where you get imported goods, and you go there for that.
For the good stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Now it's like, what is it? I forget what it is. It's like something like they'll go lobster fishing in the ocean, like off the East Coast. They'll go lobster fishing. They'll send the lobsters to China for processing, and then they'll have them sent back because that's cheaper than doing the processing here. It's insane how cheap it is.
Yeah,
to
just
ship
the economics
around.
Of it.
Yeah,
determines the pathways.
Not so much on the moon though.
Of consumption. Okay, so algae. So it's either algae, which you can grow just by sunlight.
Right. Well, they don't use sunlight. They use artificial light. Everything is like super. They have these algae vats that they...
But where are they getting energy?
From nuclear reactors, ultimately. The whole city is powered by two nuclear reactors.
So this is helium-3.
No, not fusion reactors.
Helium-3 is in the moon.
Okay, well, gold's in the ocean. Go get it.
Oh, okay. All right, there you go.
Well, this is
just, it's 2080.
Yeah, that's true.
Go figure it out. So there. Snap.
Snap, snap, snap. Oh, just one snap. Not a Z snap. Okay. I didn't want to invent any brand new technology for the story. Everything's based on existing technology. Mm-hmm. And so the reactors they have are good old-fashioned fission reactors.
Okay. Where are you getting your uranium?
You get that from Earth. But once again, not that heavy.
Uranium is actually very heavy.
Well, yes, it's quite dense.
Yes,
with all those 92 protons going on. Yes. But for
uranium, by the way, named after the planet Uranus.
It is. Yeah. But what's Neptunium named after?
And plutonium.
Plutonium also
plutonium.
A plutonium isn't even named after a planet, right?
That's right. It got on there on false pretense.
Yeah.
Don't get me started. All right. So, is it just does anyone stay there permanently?
Yes. Artemis's internal economy.
Artemis is the name of the colony.
Yeah. Yes, the city.
The city. Okay.
Its
population?
Its population is about 2,000 people, mm-hmm. not including tourists. And its main income is tourism. Mm-hmm. It's about 40 kilometers from
We know that's a thing.
That's
a
thing.
Cities that do that today.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. And
like Roswell, New Mexico.
Well, that's one
that's
option.
An example.
Or a Caribbean resort town is another example. And I based Artemis's economy kind of the internal workings after like resort towns in the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. So you've got the really nice affluent areas for the tourists and then the, shall we say, more austere conditions where the
working class the enterprise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And those are the people, those are like immigrants. It's similar to like America in the early 1800s where, hey, if you can get here, you're welcome.
Yeah.
You're welcome to make a life here. Mm-hmm. If you can get here.
So how does a poor person get to the moon if it takes $70,000?
Well, that's if you're going to emigrate to the moon.
There's a worker immigrant program, I guess.
No, there's no, there is not.
Guest worker program.
Nope. Nothing like that. There's no policies even. Mm-hmm. It's just like, It's kind of self-regulated by whether or not people can get there. It's the same as an immigrant's tale, you know, back in the days of like the New World, which is where, okay, I'm a welder and I want to go work in Artemis.
So your family saves up the money for you to go.
I'm selling my house. I'm selling my shop.
And you land with $10 in your pocket.
Right.
And then you make
And then make I'm going to, yeah, and I'm going to start my shop here. One-way trip makes it a little cheaper,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm. So how are they breathing?
Your diaphragm goes down and it expands your ribcage. So the oxygen is actually, there are lots of ways of managing oxygen in an atmosphere, but the way things work out in Artemis is they have a thriving aluminum smelting industry because they're constantly growing and they're constantly making aluminum. And they refine the aluminum from a mineral called anorthite, which is the most common mineral found on the moon. About 85% of the rocks in the lunar highland are just anorthite. You can just scoop them right up off the ground because there's no pesky dirt in the way. You don't have to mine. You just go get it. And anorthite is made of aluminum, silicon, calcium, and oxygen. And the amount of, it's an enormous amount of oxygen. It's like Al2 and then blah, 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 O8.
So it's oxygen is a waste product of making,
right,
of extracting aluminum from this molecule.
Right.
From this mineral.
From this mineral. Okay. And the moon is awesome. It's made of disassembled moon bases. It just some assembly required.
Okay.
It's made of anorthite is aluminum to make your moon base and oxygen to fill it.
Nice. And so now we got oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so we have food imported or
imported
grown
or locally
on
grown.
Location with
locally
energy
sourced.
Energy from
cage-free algae.
Free range algae.
Free range algae.
And it's,
I think that's just called, you know,
algae.
Algae.
And so you've got food, imported or otherwise. You've got energy. Mm-hmm. You've got oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What is the governance?
The governance is practically nil. So in terms of societies, it's very similar to a frontier town in the 1800s kind of thing in the U.S. during the westward expansion. There is like one lawman who works there. His name is Rudy. He's a former member of the RMCP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police. But now,
which makes him polite.
He's not that polite.
He's Canadian. Come
he's
on
Canadian.
Now.
He's got that inherent.
You can't make a mean Canadian.
He's got the inherent
No one will read the book
yes.
if you have a mean Canadian.
He has a no BS attitude. Let's say that.
Okay.
But for the most part, it's just social norms or how the rules are enforced. When you have a small society like that, that's a frontier, they don't have the resources to have like a large standing police force or a bunch of rules. As they grow, they would almost certainly develop that.
So in the series, the book in the series Walking Dead, what has sustained it for so long is the thought the author and the producers have put into the interpersonal dynamics that unfold in the presence of this threat.
Of this complete collapse of society.
Complete collapse of society. Who's in charge of resources? Who has distribution, who gets weird, who gets power hungry, who gets submissive. And so do you explore this human dynamic?
Somewhat. I mean, basically, you're always going to have greed, right? You're always going to have people trying to work to their best advantage and taking advantage of whatever weaknesses there are in the system. And Artemis,
Or of other people. Yeah.
And in Artemis, the case is that since it's so unregulated, something you might even call like a libertarian paradise, it comes with those disadvantages. In other words, our heroine is hired to do industrial espionage because who's going to stop you? And also organized crime likes to use Artemis as a means of laundering money because Artemis has its own currency called slugs, which stands for soft landed grams. And it's
soft
this,
landed grams.
Yes. Okay. It's a reserve currency in a way. What
but
it means
a great,
is
slug is a great word anyway.
Thanks.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So one slug can be redeemed for 1 gram of cargo transported from Earth to Artemis. So if you want to get a kilogram over from Earth, that'll cost exactly 1,000 slugs and so on. And so, but they also end up using that as a currency. And because it's this really completely unregulated, largely untracked currency, organized crime loves to come in and use it to launder money.
Wait, so if I build a ship, I basically have manufactured some of your currency.
If you can transport goods,
that's right.
Well, yes and no.
And that's actually that's kind of fair because it increases the value of. You don't want to print money if what it represents has not increased in value.
Right. Well, think of it as being more like if you go back to the days of the gold standard, if you pull some gold out of the ground, you have created money
in the day.
Yeah. Way back in the day.
I still have a gold certificate.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. When it said, now it says Federal Reserve Note.
Yeah.
In that slot, it said say, Silver Certificate, Gold Certificate. I don't know if I can still cash it in, but.
I think you can, actually, by law.
Oh, yeah. I can just go to Fort Knox and say, give me my.
Well, but they'll give you, what is it, a $1 bill?
Yeah, it's a $1 bill.
They'll give
you
$1 of today's money in gold. So there you go.
Yeah.
Here you go. It's like flake.
So how fast is this going to become a movie?
Well, I'd love it to become a movie right away. Mm-hmm. But as a writer, I mean, your only job on a film is to cash the check. Mm-hmm. And I've already done that. However,
if your book is so popular, then there's public pressure on how much latitude the filmmakers can take from them.
Somewhat,
like in the Harry Potter series.
Yes. I'm not J.K. Rowling.
You can't mess with the characters, but so much.
That's true.
Otherwise, people be all up in your business.
They would be all up in the business.
Right.
But you've got to be... I think you've got to be a bit bigger than I am to have that
to have those
pull,
that muscle.
To have that muscle. I think you got to be J.K. Rowling or Stephen King.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite a few steps...
Well, Stephen King now co-writes the,
yeah, right,
the screenplay.
Right.
So he's in it.
He's in it. He's
yeah.
in it.
Did they keep you out of that room, the screenplay room?
Well, they haven't even made the screenplay.
Will they keep you out of the screenplay room?
I don't know.
Did they keep you out of the screenplay room for The Martian?
No, actually.
Okay.
They consulted me a lot, pretty much every day. Drew Goddard, who wrote the marvelous screenplay for The Martian, was calling me and asking me stuff, usually technical questions.
Good, good. Very good. So remind me who produced The Martian?
That was 20th Century Fox. It was produced by Simon Kinberg Productions and Scott Free. And it's always an alphabet soup of companies, but Fox, right? And they have now also bought the same group has bought the rights to Artemis.
Okay.
And they have the directing duo of Chris Miller and Phil Lord lined up to direct.
Mm-hmm.
So the next step is they're going to get a...
You couldn't keep...
Couldn't keep Ridley?
Couldn't keep Ridley.
I don't know.
Oh, really? We're on a first-name basis with him now.
That's a weird thing about Hollywood, as I'm sure you've noticed, is that everybody's just calls everybody by their first name.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just seems weird. I mean, Matt Damon, they're like, hi, Matt. You know, it's just like...
Well, you need the Damon.
Yeah.
There's no Matt without a Damon. You need the Matt Damon.
I don't know.
Right?
I don't know. It's weird. So we've got Warden Miller lined up to direct, and they are right now, I think, picking a screenplay writer to do the adaptation.
Okay. And again, forgive me for not having read the book before this interview. That's why my questions are so blank.
I see how
blank.
It is.
Yeah.
No, no, that's...
I'm deeply intrigued.
That's very hurtful, Neil.
No. You have the wrong attitude. It is, I'm the only honest person.
You're the only
to tell you that
person.
In all of your interviews. Like, you see?
Literally no one else. I read your book. I loved it. So tell me about it. It takes place on the moon?
Yeah. So a day lasts a month on the moon.
Correct.
So how does that work in the biocycles of people?
Well, Artemis doesn't get any natural light onto the inside except for one little part of it called Aldrin Park. It actually has...
Wait, so you're underground?
No, they're in spheres, which they call bubbles, that are, one of them's 100 meters across and all the others are 200 meters across in diameter. They're spheres and they're half underground, half above ground.
This is a geometrically literate audience. So when you say it's a sphere 100 meters across...
Yeah.
You don't have to say then in diameter.
In diameter.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to, draw the distinction between radius and diameter. You know, I don't want to be giving a false impression.
We're here. So these are Hab domes,
They're spheres. They're not domes. You know, a dome is a hemisphere.
All right.
I mean, your literate audience would know this.
Literate audience.
Utterance. Roar, 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 roar.
So tell me about the 1/6
I'm
gravity.
More of a writer, not a speaker.
I got you.
Yeah.
Tell me about the 1/6 gravity.
Just to finish up on the previous question, they're made of aluminum. They have the hulls are 6 centimeters of aluminum, followed by a full meter of crushed lunar rock, followed by another 6 centimeters of aluminum.
Oh, so this protects you from radiation?
Radiation. Yeah. So there's no sunlight getting to you. Everything's artificial, and it's based on Kenya time. Is what they do for the their scheduling and time of day.
Kenya as in Africa.
Kenya as in Africa, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Kenya is where the Kenya Space Corporation, which actually owns Artemis, is based.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where they do all their launches from.
Remind me of the Earth latitude of Kenya.
Latitude? Zero.
Yeah, so very nice.
Yes, that's part of
it. Nice pickings there.
Kenya had two things to offer the global space community. My fictional Kenya had two things to offer. Number one, the equator.
the real Kenya would do that if it's actually on the equator.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have to be fictional for
wouldn't
that.
Wouldn't have to be fictional. But the other thing they did is they set all of their policies to be as friendly as possible for space travel. They said, we'll give you a launch license. You don't follow these stupid rules that the other countries make you follow. We'll make special tax breaks for you. You can go ahead and bust unions. We don't care. I mean, this is not, you know, it's not kindergarten. It's like they did everything they could to draw.
They earned the privilege.
They successfully drew in the global space
investment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Not mm-hmm. just investment, but actual, you know, companies relocated there. So, they maybe still be owned by Belgium consortiums or whatever else, but it's centered in Kenya.
So being on the equator, you get the benefit of the high speed movement of the equator mm-hmm. in Earth's rotation going into orbit, Earth orbit. So these missions to the moon first go into Earth orbit and then they leave?
Well, you have to first go into LEO and then you'll have to transfer
low Earth orbit.
Mm-hmm.
LEO.
I thought we that's agreed right. that this
I've
audience...
never heard anyone say LEO before.
LEO?
Yeah.
Really?
LEO.
Oh, okay.
LEO. Geo.
Okay.
MEO.
LEO, Geo, MEO.
Yeah.
MEO.
Yeah, middle Earth orbit.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Not middle the middle
Earth.
Of the Earth.
Yeah, middle Earth orbit? So you're like orbiting Sauron?
Right, exactly.
Okay, good.
Exactly.
You go into LEO, mm-hmm. and then you'll take a transfer. You need to catch up with the lunar cycler.
There you go.
Yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. Because lunar cyclers are the cycler just goes back and forth between. It's actually way more complicated, but ultimately, it comes near Earth and near the moon at regular intervals. And you do have to accelerate the people to catch up with the cycler, mm-hmm. but you don't need to accelerate the cycler anymore. So you can have this big, comfortable, basically space hotel that only ever needed to be put in that orbit once. Mm-hmm. And then so you have a nice, luxurious cruise.
And once you catch up with it, you're just on a moving vessel.
Yep.
As it is, there. Yeah.
And then you also need to be, then be decelerated or accelerated, depends on your frame of reference, to be able to go then land on the moon when the time comes.
So tell me about the 1/6 gravity. How's that working for people?
Works great. 1/6 gravity, Artemis is all set up for that. First off, it makes construction a lot simpler because you don't need nearly as much load bearing. You don't need as much load bearing on the individual floors within the bubbles. The people who live there are very good at moving around in 1/6 G. Tourists are generally not as good. surely you've seen the videos from the Apollo missions where they're kind of stumbling around. Of course, tourists in Artemis aren't wearing bulky spacesuits, so they have that going for them. Stairs can be about half a meter high because it's that easy to go up a riser.
So this sounds like an ideal place to invent new sports.
Could be. Space is limited. But there is...
Excuse me. Space is never limited.
Space is not limited.
Space on your freaking colony is limited.
Yes, that's true. I'm sorry. My colony.
Yes.
Yeah, space inside of Artemis.
Yes.
Habitable volume is limited. Uh-huh. However, there is one of the bubbles. The bubbles are named after the Apollo astronauts. And Aldrin bubble has the top four floors of it are just called Aldrin Park. And the it's all glass on top instead of the other kind of hull that I was describing. And that's all locally sourced glass because one of the other things that Anorthite gives you is silicon. And so it gives you a bunch of silicon and a bunch of oxygen. Mix those together, you get
SiO2. Glass.
SiO2,
yeah.
Yes. And so they have that. And so there's a big park there. Theoretically, you could play some games there.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So Frisbee is a challenge.
Why?
Well, you got two things that are kind of working against you. Well, working for or against. First off, 1/6 gravity. So mm-hmm. it's not going to go exactly the way you expect, mm-hmm. right?
Well, it'd be second true for off, any, pretty much anything.
Pretty much anything. Yeah. But second off, the air is only 21% of Earth's atmospheric pressure.
Why?
Because it's a pure oxygen environment.
Oh, okay. All right. So you need just the right amount of oxygen.
Just the right amount of oxygen. Because why overdesign? Why go out of your way to make it so much harder on the pressure vessels?
All right. So... I guess you've done the math on this. If it is 1/5 air pressure here, uh-huh. even if it's 100% oxygen, things should not be more flammable.
They're the exact same amount of flammable.
Exact same flammability, because it's the same
partial
density
pressure.
Of oxygen. Yeah, yeah.
Same partial pressure
of oxygen
at Earth's sea level. So right. humans would be perfectly comfortable breathing and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. However, it does cause a few other little problems.
Like?
Like water boils at 61 degrees Celsius, which means coffee tastes like crap because it can't properly brew or steep.
So you need to boil coffee in a pressure cooker.
You could make it in a pressure cooker, or you could go cold brew.
Right, yeah. That's a thing.
That's a thing.
People pay top dollar for that on Earth.
People pay, yeah, but Earth people are really stupid. You know this.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Okay, so this is a science fiction movie that takes place in the future in space. All right, and the only thing that every science fiction movie ever produced in the history of the universe has in common with one another, with each other, is that people go into space and then something goes wrong.
Okay.
Okay. that's the plot of every single science fiction movie.
Okay, fair enough.
In space.
Okay.
Something goes wrong.
Something goes wrong.
So what goes wrong?
Well, this is more of a problem having to do with people, in that the heist that our hero Jazz gets hired to do doesn't go right, and she angers some pretty powerful and very dangerous people that she was not aware were associated with the company that she was sabotaging.
Okay, so this is a
it's a crime novel.
Crime.
It is. It absolutely is. It's a heist story.
A heist crime novel that happens to be on the moon.
Right.
I gotcha. Gotcha. So what's the coolest thing to look for in the book? No, let me ask that differently. What's the most inventive thing you came up with for this book?
Most inventive?
Because in The Martian, you know, poop potatoes, that was good.
Potatoes?
That was good. That was a good one.
Okay.
Coming up with that.
You're going to get, we're going to get that one.
Yeah, yeah, that was good.
That's not getting cut. Okay, boy, well, there is a twist at toward the end of the book, which you would know if you'd read it, you know,
I'm sorry, the universe is like a big place, and I, you know, can't read everything at all times.
Grant, you know, broadly speaking, Neil, you spend your whole life in a very, very small part of that universe, right?
That's true.
I mean,
But the rest of the universe calls to me.
Oh, does it?
And you're a cog in that turning universe.
Hey, if you take a cog out of any machine, the machine stops working. I'm just saying.
No, so, you can break some cogs.
You can break some cogs. You have redundant cogs. Yeah. That's good. there is a thing at the end that I don't want to give too much away on because of spoilers, but there's some, shall we say, unexpected chemistry that happens at the end that causes a real problem. And I'm kind of proud for having come up with that. I'll tell you about it after after we're done taping.
Okay.
Or maybe I won't. Maybe you should read it.
is there dairy or farm animals or this sort of thing?
Oh no, there's nothing like that. I mean,
so it's a complete plant-based life. Plant-based diet.
Well, I mean, if you're talking about locally made stuff, then yeah, anything that's imported from Earth, it would have to be something that can be frozen or freeze-dried or something like that. It's a 7-day trip.
Yeah.
It's a 7-day trip. Mm-hmm. So like fresh meat would be challenging, right? Mm-hmm. But like frozen meat, frozen chicken, you know, eggs can last 7 days, sure.
Fruits and vegetables?
Yeah.
You can get those?
Yeah, you can get those. Uh-huh. And some people would grow them themselves in very small quantities, but not at a scale for everyone to eat. It would be a luxury item. And you can forget about like fruit tree fruit, at least not local stuff.
Now, for me, the allure of going to the moon would be frolicking on the landscape.
Okay, well, you get to do that. That's
as
part of the
excursion.
Experience. Yes, absolutely. Okay. So you can go for these excursions. They're EVA masters. Basically, going out onto the surface of the moon is...
So to be clear, EVA... NASA's multi-syllable.
Yes.
that's spacewalks, basically.
Yes.
Extra vehicular activity.
Moonwalks.
Yeah, moonwalks.
Yeah, moonwalks. Yeah. Not the Michael Jackson kind, but yeah. And you can do this in a similar way that you can go diving when you're on vacation in a nice ocean place where you have an EVA master who is out there kind of keeping track of you and maybe eight other people. He or she will be wearing like the big complicated suit with articulated fingers, everything kind of like you imagine an Apollo suit, but a little more advanced. You will be in what they call a hamster ball. It's basically just a big, clear, inflatable, airtight ball that's strong enough that if you roll it over a rock, it won't pop or anything. And you're inside and you wear a backpack that they call a scurry pack, and it regulates all the air on the inside. And you're limited to about 2 hours on any given EVA because, I did the math on this, that's about as much heat rejection that you can handle by having a big block of ice in a backpack. So basically...
So you ran the thermodynamics on this.
Yeah.
Very nice.
Thank you.
But we should remind ourselves of your academic pedigree.
I have no degree. That's my academic pedigree. You are Dr. Tyson.
No, no, no.
I am high school graduate Andy.
So no. So let us not call it academic, but let's call it academic passions.
Ah, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
That would include science and engineering.
Oh yeah, big time. I love that stuff.
There you go. There you go.
But I'm what you call a gentleman scientist, not an educated one.
So I have told people that the highest compliment I've ever gotten from anyone at any time was from you. When you said that you were writing The Martian, laying down some science to track, and you imagined I was looking over your shoulder.
Oh, yeah. What if Neil deGrasse Tyson reads this?
On the brink of tweeting about some mess up in your book.
Yes.
And you didn't want that.
I didn't want that.
You didn't want that. So am I still there?
Oh yeah.
am I still there on your shoulder?
Oh yeah. No, I was at you. You're still there. You're still there on my shoulder. In fact, Artemis is even more scientifically accurate than the Martian.
Mm.
The Martian projected forward some technologies like ion propulsion I completely ignored the effects of radiation on Mars. I just made this magical hab material that would stop radiation. I offered no explanation. In Artemis, I didn't even do that. I said, like, all right, you know, Artemis has the hull thickness to protect people from radiation. When you go out on an EVA, I calculated, let's say you're a tourist and you go out on an EVA in one of those hamster balls, you don't have a bunch of, like, protection from a traditional EVA suit. How much radiation do you get? turns out over a two-hour EVA during the lunar daytime, you would get about the same amount of radiation as getting a set of dental x-rays. Mm-hmm. So that's fine.
That's the measure.
But I checked. And the reason I checked is because I knew you'd check.
But, I get misunderstood in many of my... I'm there to just enhance people's appreciation of the book or of the movie.
Yeah, sure.
And I'm, I get characterized as a buzzkill. But
no,
I'm really just keeping everybody...
Keeping them honest.
Just keeping it... And that's all.
See, I guess I'm in some... I don't know if I'm in a minority or whatever. I'm in the opposite camp. I love that. I love what other people apparently consider a buzzkill. I'm like, yeah, you tell him, Neil, because it drives me crazy. Like, what really bugs me in a story isn't so much physics inaccuracies. I can accept a warp drive. I got no problem with that. For suspension of disbelief, no problem. What bothers me is inconsistencies.
Yep.
So if you can go faster than light, I remember there's one episode of Star Trek where they're in the, classic Trek, they're in the Enterprise, right? It can go warp. I forget what classic Trek Enterprise could go warp.
10-ish, at least 10.
Something like that. But then at one point they're like, okay, we need to get from Mercury to Earth. And it took them a while. And I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, no. Mercury is 7 light minutes from Earth. And you're going many, many times the speed of light. It's not going to take you a while.
So, yeah, that one that slipped by.
Yeah, slipped by.
There was the other episode where they wanted to magnify the sound of people's heartbeats to find out where the alien was in the spacecraft. And... was it Spock or Kirk, said, this device magnifies the sound by 1 to the 12th power.
1 to the 12th power.
Yeah, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, 1 times 1 times 1 times 1.
Times 1 all the way to 12 times. Yeah. Well,
I thought, okay, they just misread it. And then there's a similar error in another episode.
Yeah.
Where it was 1 to the 9th power. So somebody just didn't remember.
Just doesn't get that. Yeah. Well, I remember in a book, now that's not fair bagging on Star Trek books because there's so many, but I remember one of the Star Trek books, Kirk says, Scotty, I want every ohm of power to the shields.
Ohm of power. Ooh.
Yeah, so to which I imagine Scotty saying, well, he wants maximum resistance, so I guess I'll just turn him off.
Let me get astronomical on you, see if you thought about it, okay?
Okay.
Moon, of course, looks the way it does because it doesn't have an atmosphere to protect it from meteoroids.
Right.
How do you protect yourself from meteoroids, especially during meteor showers? Did you think about that?
I did.
Okay.
And the odds of any object hitting something the size of Artemis are literally astronomically low.
Okay, good.
It would have to be going, and even if it did, if you're talking about a micrometeorite, something like that, even if it did, it would have to be going very, very fast, maybe 50, kilometers a second kind of thing to make it all the way through both holes and the sand.
Okay. Good answer. A couple more. Are there occasions where people get to see total solar eclipses down on Earth?
Yes, absolutely. Literally every time there's a total solar eclipse will be during a full Earth. And so you'd be seeing that. Unfortunately, a solar eclipse from space is lame.
Yeah, it's fuzzy.
It's just like this little kind of blurry,
fuzzy,
blob.
Dark thing.
Yeah, it's like,
yeah,
it's
but
not
you talk about
exciting.
It in the book.
I don't.
That's what I'm.
Oh, it doesn't come up in the book.
That's what I'm getting at.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I'm getting astronomical on
it. No eclipses in the book.
No eclipses in the book.
You said you're getting astronomical, not literary.
Okay. So, full Earth on the moon. Mm-hmm. Is 60 times brighter than full moon on Earth.
Yeah, nice, huh?
So, did you have any evening Earthlight walks?
The Earthlight mattered for some of the EVAs they took.
Oh, good.
But once again, it only matters when you're outside because inside you get light.
It's 60 times brighter.
60 times. I didn't know.
See, there's
that's
astronomical
cool.
stuff.
That's astronomical.
I'm here.
My favorite thing is that Earth is in a fixed position in the sky.
Yes.
There's lunar libration, it wobbles, but it's there. And so one of my characters is a devout Muslim. And so he made a ramp with a prayer rug on it so that he could pray to Mecca because... since Earth is in a fixed position, that direction is
he never
always
has to change
correct.
His direction.
He doesn't have to change direction.
Right. Very good.
Yeah.
So, dude. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And so you're on tour now for the book, and there's an Audible version of it.
Yes.
Narrated by?
The lovely and talented Rosario Dawson,
oh,
whom
my
you met.
Gosh. Oh, yeah. Just to hear her, because in the exhibit that I attended, it was that Audible exhibit at setup where you got to hear some of the
Lunar Museum.
Yeah, the Lunar Museum at Comic-Con, New York Comic-Con. I got to hear some of the passages read by her. It's great.
She's really fantastic.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah.
Couldn't ask for a better narrator.
Very good. Cool. And nowadays, since everyone is stuck in traffic, audible versions of books matter.
Yes. Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
In my latest book, I decided I would narrate that because it was like short enough.
Well, you've also got, I mean, and I'm not kissing up here, you've got a great voice.
I don't hear my voice. I don't even think about it.
You've got a really good voice.
But here's how I thought about it, because it's not a long book. But so when I said, well, how many days stuck in L.A. traffic would get through this book? I figured 2 days.
Yeah.
It was a short 2 days. Yeah. So that should be the metric, the new measure of how long a book is.
Commute days.
Commute days. So Annie, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for coming through town.
Thanks for having me.
And you're based where again?
I am based in California near San Jose.
San Jose. Okay. Well, thanks for coming to New York. Your first time.
My first time. My first visit to New York City.
Welcome to the universe. Dude, we'll see you again.
Thank you.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.